You are listening to the Meet Us in Buellton podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network.
We're back to another episode of Meet Us in Buellton podcast. My name is Kathy.
And I'm Mackenzie. Kathy, we have an awesome guest on the show today. We're so excited to introduce Blake from Ostrichland, USA. Welcome, Blake.
Hey there. How are we doing?
We are great. Kathy, do you want to give a little introduction about Blake?
Absolutely. So I'm so happy to have Blake Fowler join us today from our Ostrichland, USA, here in Buellton. It is a fabulous attraction. It draws people from all over the country and world, actually, when we get to international tourism. But I'm just glad to have Blake with us and join us today and tell us a little bit more about this place so people can learn more about the ostriches and what you can do at Ostrichland.
Yeah, I'm excited to tell everyone about Ostrichland and what we do and a little bit of history about the place and inform the public about everything we're doing.
Great. Well, why don't you just go ahead and start with a little introduction then, Blake. Tell us how Ostrichland started, the history, and what we need to know.
Okay, so the do's and don'ts of Ostrichland. No, just kidding. little history on the place. This wasn't something myself or anyone in my family sought out to do, you know, in the past or anything like that. It just kind of came upon us. But originally, the ostrich farm was started by a South African gentleman named Colin Cooper, who I believe still lives in the area. And he brought eggs over here and hatched them out and got this business going. Now, this would have been in the late 80s, early 90s. Don't quote me on the exact dates, but around that time. And there was a kind of push, or as my aunt would call it, a pyramid scheme for ostriches and the meat. And it was supposed to be this big, the new hot red meat revolution. It's lean, it's healthy, it's good for you. And so I believe Colin was selling breeding pairs and doing quite well doing that for a period. And, you know, they used to go for several thousands of dollars, you know, 25, 30,000 for good pairs, and people were buying them and trying to start their farms and this and that. Long story short, the meat never really took off as far as in every day-to-day markets. And eventually he sold the farm to my aunt Trudy Brown and her ex-husband now. And they really just wanted to kind of grow hay out there. They're kind of ranchers, and he wanted to grow some hay out there and do a few things. For whatever reason, that didn't end up taking off. So my uncle Adair Brown at the time told my aunt Trudy, well, you need to do something with these ostriches because they're there and they need to get fed. And she's like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what's going on. Like, what do you expect me to do? And he was kind of like, well, figure it out. So that's what she did. And at the time, I believe I was in Santa Barbara going to Santa Barbara City College. And so my aunt was making trips daily to wonderful Buellton and checking on these birds and trying to get a little business going. And now her background is in antiques and vintage shabby chic items and things like that. And she's been doing that for years. So she was like, well, I can do my boutique-y stuff in this little gift shop here and we can make it all ostrich related. So let's use these beautiful feathers. As I'm sure a lot of listeners would know via movies and whatnot, old photos, that ostrich feathers are making an appearance in a lot of elaborate clothing and things like that. So the feathers are in their own right, their own commodity and something like that. So my aunt was, back to my story, she was like, okay, I think I can do something with this place, but we need to figure out, you know, a little bit about these birds. So anyway, eventually she held things down with a couple gals that were previously working there, I believe, and, you know, learned as she went. And eventually I was kind of done at school. That means I didn't really finish. she was kind of, I'm a musician also, by the way. So, you know, we have different minds. It's like, oh, if the music's playing, we're not focused on whatever we're doing. So anyway, I was trying to be a rock star for a long time. And then I was in the area and she said, well, why don't you come up here and check out the farm? I could really use your help. And maybe you might like the area. Well, turns out I love the area and eventually planted roots here and started to build the business, what is Ostrichland. And, you know, I was kind of like, well, I don't know anything about ostriches and this and that. But there was a TV show on at the time called Wild Boys. But it was a, you know, these guys from the show Jackass who run around with animals all the time, not harming them in any way, but just doing goofy stuff with them. And I was like, yeah, I could do some stuff like that at the ostrich farm, thinking this will be cool. But so anyway, I joined the team. And for the longest time, it was myself, my aunt, and another gentleman by the name of Frank, who would come and go as he pleased. And it was really bare bones back then. And we had some wire fencing on the property. And it was really, you know, a small roadside attraction. Today, there's a lot more fencing up and a lot more corrals. And we have about the same amount of birds because we did not continue the business as farming the birds, you could say, but processing the birds you know, using the birds in that sense. So we just have our amount of birds for our purposes, which is for viewing and kind of like a zoo, but we don't have a ton of animals. We just have, you know, mostly emus and ostriches, and we just welcome the public to our place to check it out and have a good time for children and families as well. So anyway, going forward, my aunt and I were like, okay, well, you know, I think just had started to charge admission because for the longest time people would just pull over, and then we had, you know, a little gift shop with a few little things. So we're like, you know, let's try and make a business out of this, and let's really give it a go. And so we did, and things started progressing, and more people started showing up, and we started adding more things to the gift shop and doing more things with the eggs, and really pushing all the items that we could get from the birds and what we could do, you know, with the community and the customers that we were getting. And so, fast forward about, we're coming up on 20 years that my aunt has owned Ostrich Land, Trudy Brown.
I can't believe it's been 20 years. That's crazy.
Yeah. We've been saying 20 years for like the last 10 years, but it actually is, it's been 19 years and we're coming up soon to the 20 year mark. So yeah, it's been a long time, but man, it's flown by quickly. I haven't been there for the full 20 years. I have been here for about 12 years. And I should say, if I'm going back, that, you know, my aunt wasn't fully involved in the beginning. It was kind of like they bought the property and things were happening as they already were. But so we came back, she joined, and then I eventually came, I think it was 2009. So anyway, I kind of went over a lot of stuff. Yeah, sorry.
No, that was perfect. That was a great introduction. And really, I think gives a lot of details that, you know, our listeners would want to know about. And Kathy, did you even know about all of that? I'm sure you learned something new as well.
A lot of the history, I know some things I think were maybe new to me. And I can't believe it's been that long already, because I remember what it used to be when it first came in. And we were kind of looking at it like ostriches, you know, we drive by and didn't know much about it. It wasn't like really open to the public. And then I've seen, you know, absolutely what it's done through the years and the transition it's made. And it's unbelievable. I mean, cars are just, they've had to expand their parking lot. There's so many people coming now, but they've just grown it to be a great business and a great attraction. And it definitely pulls people off the highway when they see these birds and wonder, what the heck is Ostrich Land USA? And you can actually feed them. So, you know, it's just, it's not an everyday thing that you get to do everywhere. So it's very unique.
Right. If I were going to give just some intel about what we do now to elaborate on what Kathy was saying, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So our admission rates now, I just raised the prices literally 2 weeks ago. We started out at, I think, $3 a person. It might have been even cheaper. Oh, I remember they used to have the like M&M red M&M machines that used to be like restaurants or something like that. Yeah. And that they sold food for like a quarter. And so you just put a quarter in the thing, turn the little knob, and then you get a little bit of food. Well, it was really just a handful. And that's like one bite for a bird. You know, now we do these kind of larger bowls full of feed. And so it was kind of funny. But that's how it grew. It was like, hey, there's some birds. Like, you want to see them? Like, yeah, come on in. And that's what Colin was doing. Doing a good job, but you know, we were like, hey, there's a real business here. So today we've raised the prices, I think, three times in the past 20 years, maybe four. There might have been a quick little hike there. But we're now up to $7 a person, and children 12 and younger are $3. And if you would like to feed them, it's $1 per bowl of food. And we also offer a military rate of $5 as well. And that gives you 32 acres of ostriches and emus. We have roughly 130 birds total on the farm. And we actually, due to employees thinking they can bring whatever animals they have to the farm, we actually have a bunny exhibit now.
Oh, that's
which
fun.
Kind of just came out of nowhere. There was one bunny and then another bunny, and I turned my head for too long, and then there were a lot of bunnies. And so I said, well, let's try and get rid of them. If not, everyone seems to see the bunnies running around. So I made a small little enclosure, and that's the newest thing at Ostrich Land, the little bunnies.
That's cute.
And that was just that organically kind of just happened.
You know, Blake, I know when my kids were little, I totally remember the little bubblegum machine type, turn it, put a quarter in, turn it, yeah. Get a handful. And I remember them pecking right out of my hand, eating
right,
the food.
Right.
And it was, you didn't have the bowls and the pans and stuff. So yeah, I totally remember that. And it was just, you know, a few birds and anyhow.
Right. Well, more people means more liabilities. So we have to take precautions, no more feeding out of the hand and
more,
you know, wire fences with T-posts that are falling over and everything. I had to put some nice wire with, you know, wooden framed fences out, which these birds, you know, they're 350 pounds. They tend to get in heated fights with themselves, with, you know, dominant alpha males getting in fights, and they snap the boards and they're so strong. Their kick's about, I want to say 600-700 pounds of force. And
oh, wow.
So over the years, I've learned a lot as far as handling the birds and, you know, things like that, and working with the birds themselves, which has been nice. It's another skill. And you know, I get calls to do things outside of Ostrich Land every now and then, if it's like moving some birds around, or we have a violent bird that needs to be unviolent or whatever. So that's been kind of cool to learn about these things and meet a lot of people in that industry. But yeah.
One thought I had is, from what I know, are ostriches one of the fastest birds in the world? Is that right?
So they are, well, to compare them to other birds and speed is kind of hard to do because they're flightless.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You can compare them to all the flightless birds or that's the easy way. But so anyway, to answer your question, they are the fastest animal with two legs.
Okay.
And they can run, you know, every periodical says a little different, but 40 miles per hour, they can run up to 40. Some say 45. I've seen them run fast as hell chasing me, that's for sure.
That'd be scary.
Yeah, and the thing about them, you know, where a cheetah can sprint to 60 miles an hour, but that's it, you know, 30 seconds or from what I hear, from what I understand, whereas an ostrich can go 40 miles per hour for like an hour and just haul butt and just cruise at that speed.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, they have some talents, but though, yeah, and I get this question often, do they really not fly? Like they don't fly. And the answer is no, they do not fly. They are flightless birds. but as Kathy was saying, we do get people from all over the United States and all over the world. We have a lot of international travelers, and I don't think they're coming to necessarily go straight to Ostrich Land. But like she was saying, when you're in the area, we do have a great location right off Highway 246. And you're just heading into Solvang. If you turn your neck slightly to the right, you're going to see a field full of giant birds. And most people hit the brakes at that point and just turn in because they're on vacation. And that's one of the things you do when you're on vacation.
Yeah.
So it works out for us. But yes, the birds are very fast, Mackenzie.
Yeah, that's fascinating and really crazy, honestly. What about the emus? Are they very quick or what's
they
some
are,
fun
they
facts
are
about
also.
Them?
And you can just count on me going into a story with every question, it seems like. So.
Oh, that's fine. We love stories.
Yeah, emus. The emus actually in Australia, they're native to Australia. Ostriches native to Africa. The emus are really cool birds. And I'm not sure what Colin, the original owner from South Africa, what he did with the emus, but they were there when we bought the business. So
I think emu oil was a big thing.
Emu oil was and still is a big thing. Yeah, I think oil in general is like a big thing these days because people come in and they're like, "You have emu oil?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Do you have emu oil mixed with CBD and this and that and flaxseed oil and the fish oil?" And I'm like, "We have emu oil." But yeah, we do carry it. And yeah, it was a big thing as well. And the emus, I brought up Australia and where they're from because if you can ask Australians about this, they had a big emu war in Australia. They call it the Australian Emu War or something like that. And you can look this up on Wikipedia. And the emus won, from what I understand, and occupied this area where people were living, and they all moved out, supposedly. Maybe they're back now and they've controlled it, but that's the big emu war. So emus, they're creative birds. They look kind of intimidating because they have these beady little red eyes and this blue neck, and they look like a little prehistoric velociraptors-esque, you could say. But they're really just docile, and you know, you can raise, if you have one or two, a pair, they'll really become part of the family and like the farm. I see them on a lot of farms, and they join in with all the animals. They'll come up to you and you can pet them, and they can be really, really warm and a great pet. They do have a strong kick, and they do they can be aggressive a little, but compared to an ostrich, they're just really sweet. But yeah, a lot of people like the looks of the ostriches because, you know, they have these big feathers and these big batty eyelashes, and they can be really pretty to some people. But so, yeah, there's the story. What was the original question? Emus. We have emus also.
Awesome.
Yeah, the emus are prehistoric. And I always tell people here at the visitor center when we're talking about ostrich land and go check it out and whatnot, and the emus, just to be sure to listen for the thumping like in their throat, because it reminds you of Jurassic Park, like the movie, when they're all creeping around, all of a sudden you hear something and you're looking and you're tensed up like, oh my God, what is that? But they just remind me of that. And you look at their feet and stuff, they're just very, like you said, they're very like Jurassic Park, like, I don't know. They're very prehistoric.
Totally prehistoric, yes. And you bring up a good point about the emus. The only way to tell the difference, well, not the only way, but the easiest way between male and female is by listening to the sounds that they make. And one of them, they compare to bass drums, and that would be the female. And they do this, if you think high school bass drums, because they all kind of have different tones too. So it's like, doom, 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 doom. And yeah, and they'll get going on that, and what, like a couple will start and the others will do it. But then the males do this kind of like, they call it a pig's grunt. They do this kind of root, 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 and they walk around doing that kind of weird noise. So if you're out there long enough and I was showing you, you could hear. Do we, Mackenzie, do you have samples of the emu and ostrich noises, or did I not get those to you?
No, that would be great.
All right, I'll get them in next week. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I knew the difference between the female and the male. That's kind of cool. I don't know that.
Well, come out there, Kathy, and you can take a listen one of these days.
Now I'm going to listen for it.
All right.
Well, I'm just fascinated by all these facts that you know, Blake. You obviously know a lot. I thought it was funny at the beginning you mentioned you didn't know anything about emus or ostriches, but now it seems like you know everything.
Well, it takes a lot of visitors asking a lot of questions, and the person that I am, I try and be meticulous and diligent, and whatever I'm doing, whether it's working bartending or playing music or working with the ostriches, I try and make sure and have all my facts straight. And when someone shoots me with a question, I want to know the answer and relay that to them correctly. So I've learned a lot over the years. Yes. A lot of it is, you know, hands-on, trial and error, and working with the birds. And like I said, people asking questions, but I've done research as well, and talking to other ostrich farmers and emu farmers in that industry as well also. And it's paid off. It's good to have this knowledge, especially in what you're doing.
That's great. One question I think a lot of people would have is, obviously, if you want, you can feed the birds. What are you feeding them in these bowls?
Yeah, so both birds, for the most part, are herbivores. They say omnivores because they say they eat like small insects and things like that. But both birds eat a lot of grasses, vegetation, and things along those lines. But what we feed them is a pellet. A lot of people would say, oh, you're giving them rabbit food. You're giving them rabbit food. Well, that's a lot of not city folk, I guess. I don't know. Just they've only seen rabbit food as a pellet, but there's all different types of pellets. And what we're giving them is a pellet special for their diet, ratites specifically. And what that is their scientific family, I believe. There's genus, phylum, kingdom, genus, phylum, class, aves, all that stuff. Their breakdown is that their scientific name is called ratite, and that includes ostriches, emus, rheas, which are South American, kiwis, which are from New Zealand, and that's why if you guys know any New Zealanders, they do call them kiwis, and then the cassowary, which are in Madagascar and Australia as well, I believe. And so those five birds are all ratites. And the pellet that we give them is a ratite breeder pellet. So it's made up of a lot of common things, alfalfa, wheat, soy, corn, you know, things like that. But it has their vitamin nutritional balance, what they need. And we've just kind of stuck to the same one. We get it from L.A. Hearn, which is a very popular brand. And they bring it in and truck it in and fill up our silo tanks. And so they're mostly getting a pellet that is special for their diet and it has all their nutritional value that they need. But that being said, when we get rain, hopefully we get some rain next year, a lot of rain here. We do get a lot of grass out on our field, which is nice. And the ostriches, they love the grass. Like sometimes you'll see them come up to feed and they just have all this grass all over this beak and they have like these green beaks. So I know they really like the grass. And the birds also eat rocks and pebbles as well, because they have a gizzard and like a chicken, that's how they digest their food and kind of break up all their food on the inside. That's another little fact about the birds.
Crazy.
Like many other fowl though. But feeding the birds is definitely the main attraction at Ostrich Land. It's what everyone does. And like when someone comes up there, I don't want to feed them. We kind of look at each other and just like, they'll be back in a couple of seconds. And probably 50% of the time, everyone comes back. All right, give me one of these bowls. I want to feed these suckers. Yeah. And it's one of these things that's like, for some people, it's extremely intimidating and they're terrified. Some people won't even get it out of their car. It's kind of funny. They have this fear of birds. And, you know, it's an 8 to 9 foot bird, depending on how tall it's standing at that point. And, they're the largest bird in the world, and the emu is the second largest bird in the world. So they are a little intimidating. And the ostriches eat like, high school teenage boys that just got home from a game or something like that. They have like no manners. Yeah, this is what my aunt always said, but she's right. It's so true. They come up and there's do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Just I'm making hand movements here of the birds just attacking the bulls. And, then the alpha ones will come up and some of the other males will like run away because they know. And then maybe one will stick around and try and get a fight and then he'll run away eventually. And then he'll alpha male will eat by himself. And I was like, what's going on? But then they'll all come back soon. And there really is a pecking order, and in quotes there, if you've heard that term before, but it's true. Like you see a cycle and the birds come up but it's really fun to watch. And you know, I've been out there for so many years, and I go out there sometimes. I just look around and I'm like, God dang, these birds are just dumb and funny and goofy. And sorry, I called them dumb. I know this. I'm not one of these people that hates animals and has a bunch of them. Their brain is smaller than their eyeball. That being said, their eyeball is quite large, but they're just not the smartest animal. Let's just put it that way. But they know how to eat, and they know how to go and find their water, and they know how to eat grass. And all the birds that we've raised there, I can tell you that, you know, we have 32 acres. They have a lot of acreage to run around, and they really just, they do love it there. And people always ask, we have a river behind us, and they always ask like, oh, do they ever get out and get out of the river? And I'm like, I can't say no to that. Yes, it's happened. But at just about every time, they're pacing back and forth, trying to find their way back in. And the reason why they get out is because they get in fights and one kind of loses and runs into the fence and flops over and this and that. And I keep building the fences higher and higher, but they're just so strong, they manage to get through. But this happens once every couple of years, by the way. But anytime they get out, they're always pacing back and forth. Where's the feed? How do I get back to the group? Like, I want to go home. So we get them, we got them back in, and then they run right in, and there's a customer, and they know they're smart enough to see people, and they're like, if there's a person there, there's a good chance they have feed. And so they run right up and start eating. Yeah. There's another story.
Well, I love that. Kathy, I was kind of wondering maybe what your experience has been feeding the birds. You said, you know, obviously you've been there several times. What's been your experience?
It's totally fun. And when I have family come to town or visitors come in, We've had travel writers that we've taken over there before. So, and I've had kids and adults and people of all ages. And it's always a great experience, especially if they've never done it before, to see their expressions. And as Blake said, they can be intimidating. So some people kind of back away. They're not so sure. Other people just stand right in there and do what they need to do. And you just got to hold the pan out there nice and firm with two hands and let the ostriches come in, because they do come down pretty hard and they have those long, windy necks. They can move around, and but you're looking them eye to eye, so you can see so up close their, you know, their beaks and their eyeballs and their little heads, their long necks, and you can look at their feet, and you totally get an up close personal experience with them. So no, we always enjoy going over there and taking friends or family in town. And like I say, we work with travel writers that come in and they like to go over and check it out and write about it. I know there's been some celebrities, Blake, too, that have been there, and you've got eggs signed by them, I think, in the shop. I don't know if they're still there. I know you used to have some like different celebrities, and I, you know, can't always recognize the signatures because of how celebrities write sometimes, but you can maybe elaborate on that a little bit, like who's actually been there before, like who do we have coming here?
Yeah. Let me just back up a little bit. First of all, Kathy, if you want to put an application in Ostrich Land, I will hire you immediately because you are on top of it all with everything you know, and I'm like, god dang, she's going to do some training with some of my new staff members.
No, I've just been around a while.
No, Kathy has been coming for years. I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done in the community and with Ostrichland. You've never left us out, that's for sure. And you're doing a great job. So thank you for bringing everyone that you've been and relaying them our way. We really appreciate that.
Thank you guys for doing an awesome job.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So also you did mention, as I only mentioned the intimidating part about feeding them, I just wanted to elaborate again. I forgot to go back to tell you about all the children that love it and they get a laugh out of it. And, you know, young adults as well, and the young person and all of the older people. We also get senior groups that bring buses, and the seniors love it. And we also get, I've had, you know, groups of handicapped people from different, whatever businesses or, you know, those fields and coming here. And so we get all types of people and everyone usually gets a laugh out of it. I did bring up the people that are intimidated, but they eventually get a laugh out of it too, as well. So it really does put smiles on people's faces. Now, moving forward, I just wanted to go back and mention that and thank you for bringing that up. But as far as the celebrities that go there, because we have an ostrich farm, and again, our location is not only good here in the valley being on the highway, but we are also located not far from Los Angeles, which, as everyone knows, that's where all the movies and action happens. And because of that, I think we're the closest ostrich farm, or at least the closest known ostrich farm to Los Angeles. And yeah, we get a ton of calls for movies, photo shoots, commercials, a lot of YouTube things now going on. Which is kind of funny. I was telling the gal that initially called me about this podcast. I said, you know what's so funny? We've shot 4 or 5 movies out here, done all these commercials, a lot of stuff, but I've never done a podcast. So I was kind of excited to come in and do the podcast with you as well. But yeah, celebrities, we had the Kardashians there, of course. Everyone sees the Kardashian egg and you see Khloe really big. It wasn't their actual show, but it was one of her spinoff reality shows, I guess. I was not there that day, but I mean, we could go way back sideways, which the valley is known for here, the San Ynez Valley. I'm sure you may have brought it up at some point in other podcasts as well, because a lot of local businesses were featured. We were one that they didn't actually, come and shoot a scene here or anything. And it's kind of funny because it confuses everyone, because people that know the movie always, they did shoot what do they call it? Kind of a montage with pictures of the ostriches, and they have video footage of the ostriches as they're driving through. Definitely they did take some shots, but they never, did a scene on site. But they always mention the part where Thomas Hayden Church, is that his name? The one guy that's supposed to be getting married in the movie, runs through the ostrich field naked, and everyone always talks about that. And they're like, remember the part where he runs through it naked? I'm like, well, he just said that in the movie. They didn't actually do that, and he didn't actually do that, and they don't show that, but everyone thinks they do. But he does mention, like, man, I had to run through this dang field of ostriches. Those suckers are mean, or he says something along that line. So yeah, we've done Sideways, the movie is one of the big ones for us, and the Valley. Most recently, I want to say a couple years ago, there was a Ray Romano movie, Paddleton, I believe, which was shot in Lompoc and all over Solvang Bulten as well. And they actually came and we were on the cover of Netflix for like a couple days because it was like the front of our building and they're standing outside. And that was like one of the pictures that they showed, you know, advertising it on Netflix, Paddleton. And that was a pretty cool little movie with Mark Knopfler and Ray Romano. But yeah, going back to the eggs and all the signatures, don't ask me everyone's signature either because I don't know half of them on there. I know there's a lot. And again, these YouTube guys, I always tend to get the signatures because, you know, I don't know everyone either. And like, I just did a YouTube one with some gamers, which I'm not a gamer. And man, these guys, they definitely knew what they're doing. And then I saw their video. I'm like, oh my gosh, they have like millions of followers. And we've been getting a lot of younger kids that are like, I can't believe you have so here, this and that. And I was like, yeah. And they were like, you're the guy that was on there. And I was like, yeah, that was me. It was crazy.
That's awesome. Kind of funny. That's nice for you guys.
Yeah. No, it's always good. We can pretty much count on if someone's coming in to film in the area, which fortunately for our beautiful valley, we get a lot of video shoots and things like that. We can pretty much count on them stopping by or a producer coming by and like, hey, how would you feel about a crew here? And I'm like, it's fine. We do it all the time. Let's make it happen.
So awesome.
Yeah. We've done quite a bit of stuff.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much for telling us about that. That's a lot of, I feel like, variety as far as the movies and shows. You've had gamers, you've had it all there. So
yeah,
pretty popular place.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that we haven't highlighted yet about Ostrich Land that we should know before we close?
Yeah. I'm trying to think here. I know that's, we kind of went through everything really quickly here. You know, people always, where we sit in the San Ynez Valley is pretty much right in between Bulten and Solvang, though we are a little closer to Bulten, just past the hitching posts. And so we definitely love Bulten, and I live in Bulten, and so we'd like to mention that. But we do mention both Solvang and Bulten because we are in the middle, and we're actually in county. And so we have a lot of different rules and regulations. People are like, oh, you know, we need to talk to Bulten mayor and do this and do that and talk to Solvang. And I'm like, well, we're in the county, so we got to go to Santa Maria, which is, you know, 30 minutes north of us to deal with stuff, if, you know, permits and zoning and things like that. And as I get older, I'm 36 now, and, you know, I was younger when I first came along, but the job for me back then was I can make my own schedule. I can go surfing whenever I want. I can play music with whatever I want. Then I go to work and this and that. Whereas now I'm running it, more as a business owner, though my aunt is the sole proprietor, but I'm running it as I were owning it. Also is because she is up in Arroyo Grande and doesn't make it down here as often. Though she works her butt off, I just want to point out, ordering all our merchandise in, and, you know, she talks to people in China and all over the United States. And you know, she's constantly on the computer doing all the back end stuff, which takes a lot. But yeah, so I really run the place as it's my own, and I do have a lot of history out there now. I used to live, I'm sure you probably know or seen the trailer out there. I used to live in the trailer and heard the emus at night going doom, 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 like crazy. You want to talk about something kind of freaky, but, you know, you get used to it after a while. But yeah, so I have a lot of history there. And as I was saying, I'm really trying to grow the business and grow the place and really trying to make it look pretty. And so I'm trying to get water out to, you know, if you want things to look pretty, you need water and irrigation. So I want to plant more trees. And I always kind of associate some of the pretty wineries that I worked at, you know, that we have in this valley. And I'm like, man, it needs to match all that. And so I'm doing the best I can. You know, I remember when I would take my own car out into the field and pick up ostrich eggs and everything. Well, now we have a tractor, we have nice UTV, and we have all these things. And so we're using them. And so, like I said, I'm trying to grow the business and grow the aesthetics and the look of the business and really trying to make it pop. Because I don't want to do private events out there and be like, oh, it's a beautiful view, this and that, but it's dusty. And I really want it to look really pretty. And so we're working on that. And fortunately, business is good. And I remember when, you know, we would, I'm giving you some of our sales numbers here. I remember when we would have a busy day and we would make $250 or something like that back in the day. Oh, we had a good little Monday. We did $250. And on the weekend, we did a little more than that. And, you know, now we do over a weekend, Saturday or Sunday combined, we'll do 6,000 people just coming through. And it's hard to believe 6,000 people. Like, are you kidding me? Well, on Saturday, we've done 3,700 before, and Sundays are get busy. And that just tells you how much tourism is coming through this valley.
Yeah. Yeah, and, that's incredible.
Yeah, that's a lot of children and as well, and this and that. But do a lot of people now, and like I said, the business is coming, and we're putting a lot of money back into the business and trying to just do positive things.
Well, that's great. I love hearing about how you're continuing to grow the business and make it a wonderful place for people to visit. One last question I just want to ask you today, and what we like to ask all of our guests is, you said you live in Buellton, Blake. So what's your favorite thing about Buellton? Obviously, ostrich land is a little bit outside of that. But what's your favorite part about living in Buellton?
You know, Buellton and the rest of the San Ynez Valley, the area is beautiful and the people are just very nice. And I know there's a lot of people these days that are struggling to communicate with each other and get along with each other. And I haven't really noticed that so much here in our valley. I mean, I can't say that I haven't, but when I tell people, I'm like, and I talk to people, I'm like, just so thankful for where we live. And that, you know, a lot of people here have different points of views, but can meet in the middle for local events or whatever and just get along great. In my opinion, I feel like just everyone's very nice here. And I noticed that really quickly. And I'm kind of a social butterfly. And you get to know the community, and the community accepted me, and I just fell right into the community and the people. And it's like the whole area is just great. But yeah, Buellton in its own right, I love it. It's just a beautiful place, and everything's easy too. I don't really have much of a problem, you know, getting around, dealing with this, dealing with that. It's kind of an easy life, I feel like.
I think that's a common thread we see, is the community and the people.
Well, if you weren't convinced at the beginning, I'm sure you are now. Ostrichland, USA is a must-see place when visiting the Buellton area. Thanks for joining us today, Blake. As always, we want to thank all of our listeners. Don't forget to leave us a rating, review, or tell us about something you'd love to learn more about in Buellton. Have a great day, everyone. This has been another episode of the Meet Us in Buellton podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Mackenzie Felsted and Kathy Breland, and produced by Rob.